Welcome to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Gary Carnevale. Thank you for listening tonight. This evening, I'll have a conversation with novelist Jen Lorson about her first gay romance, The International Language. But up first, Greg Moralia with Outbeat Radio News.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of February 21st, 2021. Out, Pennsylvania Representative Brian Sims announced last week that he's running for lieutenant governor of the state. After 10 years in the state house, he said, I've taken the lessons from my parents and reinforced them in my work as a legislator to take responsibility, commit to service, be courageous, and push for fairness. And he added that he hopes to bring a bold vision of leadership based on lived experience and shared values to the Commonwealth. And in California, rumors circulating around the internet about Caitlyn Jenner, perhaps one of the most famous transgender women in the country, and her thoughts about running for governor in California if Gavin Newsom is recalled. But rest easy, Jenner's manager, Sophia Hutchins, has squashed the rumor. Hutchins said Caitlyn is not running for governor and never has considered running for governor and is very happy doing the work she's doing to promote LGBT rights and spending time with her 18 grandchildren and 10 children. Republicans are pouring money into the recall effort over Newsom's handling of the coronavirus pandemic, and Trump supporters in the GOP have dumped more than $3.5 million into the initiative, and proponents say they have gathered enough signatures to trigger a recall. And as Pride committees up and down the West Coast begin to make plans for their 2021 celebrations, already one major city has said that it will not have an official Pride parade this year. Seattle organizers told the Bay Area Reporter last week that they're scrapping their in-person event this June and are once again going virtual due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Other prides are likely to follow suit and have strictly virtual events this year, while others are contemplating holding hybrid celebrations, with some events virtual and others smaller in-person gatherings. Most of the annual LGBTQ festivals take place in late spring or summer, when federal, state, and local officials expect to see most Americans vaccinated against the virus. But the Folsom Street Fair, as an exception, may proceed in 2021 in San Francisco as a modified in-person event, depending on how things go with COVID-19 vaccinations and current infection levels. The executive director for the Folsom Street event told the Bay Area Reporter that the current word from City Hall is that they will be able to have some sort of an event. They were pretty clear that unless something changes dramatically, that they can have an outdoor event on Folsom Sunday, scheduled this year for September 26th. And also in San Francisco, a transgender African-American man who is also a San Francisco Fire Department paramedic is suing the city, alleging he has been discriminated against on the basis of race, gender identity, and harassed and retaliated against. His attorney, Angela Alioto, spoke with a Bay Area Reporter about her client, Ronnie Jones, a 44-year-old man who's worked for the department since 2006. He came out as transgender in 2015, and things at work have not been the same since. Alioto said it's part of a policy of how people are treated. She said that she has 25 cases against the city involving the fire department, Department of Health, and Sheriff's Department. She said they all seem to have the same issue when it comes to gender. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
Jen Lorson is the author of many novels, which some outlets consider romance, but I would refer to as postmodern rom-com slash erotica. Jen has just released her first book that focuses on a gay relationship, The International Language. Welcome to Outbeat Collage, Jen.
Oh, hello. Thank you.
First, tell us a bit about your background, you know, from New Jersey and back.
So I grew up in New Jersey. Then moved to California when I was in my early 20s, and I did a lot of different things, a lot of different careers, and then I went back to school to teach, to become a teacher, which I did, and I've been there. And then I taught fourth and fifth grade for about 10 years, and my favorite thing was writing. And I always had this story that I wanted to write, and I love reading romance, and I love reading just books in general. I read everything. And so when I knew I was going to time off from teaching to help my mom, that I wanted to write the story. And so I did write it, to my surprise. and then I just had more ideas and more stories. And so I just kept writing. And I did move back to Jersey to help take care of my mom about, 7 or 8 years ago. And yeah, so I live here in New Jersey, where it is freezing cold. And
right.
And then I've been writing ever since. I started in 2015.
Right? Was your first book?
Yeah. And and then so this was my ninth. It was my seventh full and ninth book.
Nice. So talk about writing and publishing your first book, Too Far to Care, and you know, how did it change your life?
I mean, it really did. It changed my life in a lot of ways. I, you know, had no idea what I was doing, but, you know, I finished, I found, I have a friend who, is a copy editor, worked as a copy editor in New York City, and he agreed to, do some editing for me. So I, you know, my grammar was, sentence structure wasn't horrible. And then I worked with my stepfather and my husband to make a cover. So I made my own cover. And so that was it's a different cover initially. We just stumbled along and figured it out. And in 2016, when I released it, Amazon didn't have a paperback publishing service yet. So I did a different one, and then I did a Kickstarter to raise money so I could buy some paperbacks, and then I sent them out to people. It's much easier now.
Right.
In the past 5 years, it's changed so much. But I was already in the romance community as a reader, and I knew a lot of people. And I knew a lot of bloggers, so I was somewhat lucky to be able to use, you know, to have those relationships, and they were helpful.
Nice.
And when I finished that, and that was a book that was based on something that happened to me. And then I had this another idea, and so that one I wrote really fast, and I don't know where it came from, but some are based on real things, some are just stories that I thought of.
I think you have an incredible talent for writing dialogue. Are you one of those writers who sort of eavesdrops on every conversation happening around you and scribble it down in your little notebook?
Yeah, definitely. And my favorite people to eavesdrop on are children, because they have the best conversations. but I also, I miss being in a coffee shop and just listening to people. Like, I'll wear my headphones and I have nothing on, and I just, you know, like, just sitting there. If I feel I'm feeling like I want to, you know, procrastinate and not write, then that's what I do. I am the worst eavesdropper. But I do. Yeah, I love writing dialogue. I love writing like text conversations, phone conversations. Like, that's definitely my favorite thing.
And you're great at it. I love the text conversations and the phone conversations.
Yeah.
Right. It's just our new reality. It's how we communicate, but it's a different way of communicating, really.
Sure. Yeah. And it's one thing that's interesting is, you know, because I'm older, I have to kind of figure out, like, well, I'm not a 31-year-old guy. Like, how does a 31-year-old guy communicate too? So that's been something that I've been trying to figure out too. So there aren't a lot of phone conversations in any of my books, really, because most of the people are in their 30s or younger.
Right.
There are FaceTime people are far away from each other. Mm-hmm. But right. Yeah, but so, I love writing text conversations. They're fun. Because you know why? Because you don't have to write the, like, the, she said. Or,
oh, right, right. Exactly.
You know, it's just straight
right. Dialogue. It's just there, right.
It's, it's a lazy writing.
Well, it's an interesting one, because when you think about it, like, how often do you read a text and you're like, you know, oh, you know, it makes you a little angry, and then you're like, oh, they probably didn't mean that. You know what I mean? So yeah. There's an extra sort of depth of I guess, perception for, you know, for the receiver of the text.
Sure. And I feel like for me, I mean, a lot of my conversations are just sort of silly banter anyway. So, like, texting is good for that, because, you know, unless you're just like, I'm here, come get me.
Right,
you
know, right, right.
Outside, then usually like Andrew and I's texts are usually ridiculous, like just sending like dumb pictures and memes and, you know.
Right, right, right. So. And little hearts and roses and kisses. Yeah.
We've been married almost 13 years, so there's less of that.
Than there used to be.
You're still like a newlywed.
Oh, yeah, right. So how much do you draw on your own relationships and those of your friends to sort of flesh out your stories and create your characters?
Well, I definitely base a lot of people on other people, but I would say Paul is more like a combination of a couple of people. And, but it's funny, like, I always think, oh, this is like this person and this person a little bit. And then Andrew book and I'd be like, did you base this on so-and-so? I'm like, no.
You're like, busted.
But you know that they're also like a little bit of me too. Like Paul is, I feel like he definitely has a lot of me.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I for sure there's some characters that are based on like on one specific person, or I was thinking of some.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But it's all. Like admiration. It's no like this is based on this person that I hate, or you know, sometimes maybe
a little dissing, you know, goes a long way, right? Yeah. So do specific plots come to you, or is it a general theme, or do you sort of build your stories around characters, or a combination?
I mean, it's a little bit of a combination. I think, definitely, like, the first two or three books that I wrote were based on real things that happened. So I structured the story around those events, and then just altered them to make them more interesting or flow better. But I would say the second half of like four or five books that I've written have been mostly character. And, you know, I mean, romance is a formula, so there are certain beats you have to follow. And I feel like sometimes I do it in order and sometimes I don't. Like, I really feel like Paul and Dante's story is flipped almost, where like that sort of their intense beginning, and then it was cut off, and then there was sort of the conflict and the separation, and I feel like it was a couple of I maybe did it exactly the way the formula was written.
right.
But I try to make them a little bit more interesting, and hopefully not something you've read 100 times before.
Right, right.
Also, but close. Something you've read 100 times before that's something you like.
Yeah.
Like, I wrote a series with Frank, Joe, and Sebastian, and they were all that was all character, but also trope. So like one was a insta love kind of, the second one was a slow burn, kind of like forced cohabitation. And then The third was like a workplace romance, but also a secret baby. Romance readers love stuff like that. So
yeah. So did you grow up reading a lot of romance?
Yes and no. Like, I think the books I remember reading the most are Judy Blume. So
yeah.
There was romantic elements in her books, especially the young adult ones. I think, I read a lot for school. And then I kind of didn't like reading very much until I found Daniel Steele and Sidney Sheldon.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is fun. Now in school, teachers encourage you to read things that you want to read.
Right.
Like, you're like, just read the comic book.
Right.
But when we were kids, it was like, you have to read.
Right.
The Oxbow Incident.
Yeah. Scarlet Letter, right.
Like, for Isaac, anyway.
Right.
Not Sidney Sheldon.
yeah. And who was the other? Oh, Judith Krantz I used to read, too, like, randomly. I remember her reading her, like, in college, and people were like, why are you reading this weird romance book? And I was like...
Because it's just so hopeful, and you know how it's going to end. That's
right.
The best part. That's what I love most about romance, is that...
Right.
You know you're going to get off in the end always.
Yeah. And it's interesting kind of seeing how the genre has morphed. Because, in the 50s and in early 60s, it was kind of, cheesy. And then
right.
You had sort of like Jacqueline Suzanne, and you had like Sidney Sheldon. And yeah, all those crazy kind of writers in the 70s, right, who really kind of turned it upside down. And, of course... there was a lot more sex, as our world was changing, right?
I think that, in my 20s, I was more of a, that was when sort of the paperbacks, like the bigger paperbacks.
Right.
So I read a lot, and I was in San Francisco, and I didn't have a lot of money, so I was a library... I was there. I was at the library like every day.
Yeah.
And the first thing I read was the Armistead Maupin series.
Oh,
the,
right. Of course.
Like, that changed my life too, because those were just so great. And there was a lot of romance in there. There was a lot of heartbreak. And
Right.
But it really, I feel like it changed. And then when indies... romances started becoming popular, and there's just more now. I mean, you can read any, you name a
right.
romance, kind of romance that you can read, it's out there somewhere.
Right.
Like, there's dinosaur romance, and like shifter romance. Like, I'm writing...
like fantasy stuff, right.
Yeah. So... that's been kind of fun too. So and it's all very inexpensive and accessible.
Right.
That's, you don't have to wait anymore.
Right.
Bookstore or the library.
Oh yeah.
Get it now. So I think I really started reading again in like when Maggie was a baby, 2011.
Right.
So I was a big reader, but I think I really started just,
yeah,
like mostly read romance then.
Right. Do you read while you're writing?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
It's like my reward at the end of the day.
Right. I mean, I know a lot of artists sort of, like filmmakers, like really won't be watching films when they're making a film, or some writers won't be reading because they don't want to be, influenced or to deviate from their sort of process.
Sure. I think I tend to read less rom-com when I'm writing or when like a middle of it, but I still, I just read a really dark series of books and, but that also kind of carried, you're like, oh no, okay, this is supposed to be like a funny story. And I'm like, well, maybe he gets I'm like, no. So sometimes, I mean, I think for me, like, I don't know. I feel like my writing style is, you know, it's distinct enough that I'm not going to, I mean, probably I'm guilty of throwing in a phrase here and there that might be similar.
Yeah.
But you know, romance, there are a lot of similar things.
Right. It's a genre. Right. And I never thought of the comparison between Amistad Maupin and how you write, and because it's journalistic in a way. It's just straight on, you know, the straight on story. I mean, you don't get a lot of sort of flowery prose and lofty themes. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. No. I love those books so much.
They are simply amazing. Right.
And the way they were, like, they were big. Do you remember, like, the paperback?
Yes. Big? Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, like, the original, yeah, I just remember having a stack of them. And, you know, I just, San Francisco, so I was like.
Oh, right, you got it.
It really, I think, it like, changed the way I felt about the city. And
right, right.
And I feel like it was a positive thing.
Yeah, you know, he's writing another one right now that'll be out, I think.
He's also
he's
like relationships between people and then just
yes
funny dialogue. Like he's
really right. Lively, interesting dialogue. Yeah, I mean he's a great guy. I've met him a couple times.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean he's so accessible and lovely. I mean he lives in London now, so you know, unfortunately we don't, you know, I used to see him all over the Castro. Right. Yeah. But this book is about Mona, because he said that was one story that he kind of cut off because she moved away. So now that he lives in London, because you remember from the book, she moved away to you know, be a beard sort of for, you know, a wealthy gay aristocrat. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I'm thrilled. I mean, you know, I've read every single one of them. And, when I was thinking about moving to San Francisco, my friend was like, you have to read these. And I never heard of them, which is ridiculous, but.
Well, they're just, like, such a love letter, too. Like, and one of the first jobs I had in San Francisco, I worked at Zim. Do you remember Zim?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so, they always are. One of the things he wrote about was that they always had like where they were from, and I was always disappointed. Like, come on, like can't I put where I'm from? But yeah, that was a job.
Right.
In Van Ness, it was like that was, and oh, it was yeah. a different place.
Right. It was a different world. Well, I mean, you know, your novels are also love stories to the city. And I love that. Yeah.
I try. I think my next series, not the one I'm writing now, but the next series are going to be on the East Coast. But, yeah, I do. Most of my books are set in San Francisco, except a few. Like, there's one, a Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
And there's a few that are in different places, but... Yeah, I mean, six out of the nine are Bay Area.
Right.
Can you tell I miss it? I just miss it.
I know. Right. Yeah. I mean, that probably really infuses your sort of energy to write about it, right?
And then I'm like, gosh, I don't really know, like, because I haven't lived in San Francisco, you know, for 10 years. Yes. Even when I was in Half Moon Bay, you know, like so.
Right.
I'm like. I don't know. I don't really know what's going on. You know, like, I don't know what the city's like now. And
oh,
I know
yeah.
what's, and I know, I mean, we were at your wedding, so it hasn't been that long. But,
right. Well, I mean,
you know, it changes. And San Francisco has changed so much in the past 20 years.
Right. Yeah. I mean, most cities are like that. They're really changing. But, you know, I think it's more dramatic in San Francisco because there was always, you know, there are no skyscrapers higher than the Trans-America pyramid, right? And all these beautiful Victorians, you know, and now it's so many high rises and it's so.
Like Dubai.
Right. I know, exactly.
Yeah, I was like, this, I mean, it's jarring when you come back.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I'll be driving down, you know, Market or walking down Market, and I'll think, you know, because I lived in Fox Plaza, you know, that old, ugly apartment building. But, you know, I'll look, you know, I'll walk like, this is my neighborhood. I want to walk around my old neighbor. And I look around, I'm like, what is that? Where did that come from? You know, these giant 100-story high rise. And you're thinking, gee, where are all these people going? How are they all living here?
Yeah, but I feel like it's still the same. It's still a beautiful
park. Oh, yeah.
The park, you know, like Golden Gate Park's still the same. You know, some of the neighborhoods are similar. And so, you know, like, it still has like a, you know, it has a good feel to it, so.
And it has this unique charm, right?
And I try to, like, real places, even though you know, Andrew tells me not to do that, but, you know.
Yeah.
But I always say nice things about them, so none of it's negative.
Right,
but you know, places I've been to before.
Yeah. So talk about your creative process when, you know, how you go about, you know, getting your ideas on the page.
I mean, I feel like any creative person, like, I just, like, things come to me in, you know, like, inconvenient places, like the chef driving or, but I try to get things down as quickly as possible. Like, when I have a general idea, and then once, so, like, I had an idea for a series that I'm going to do, hopefully this year, we'll see. It's all about food. So it's all like, you know, there's like a cheesesteak play one, and there's a food truck in one book, and then like a candy shop in another. So that was like a very basic idea, because I was probably hungry. So then when I have an idea, and then if I have time or I'm like, you know, putting off writing, which is half the day. I'm like, oh, I'll do an outline. So then I'll start like really developing, you know, usually it's just bits and pieces, and then I'll think of something and go write it down. You know, like with Paul's book, that was like an idea I had forever. I say Paul, but it's Paul and Dante, but Paul is, I almost single point of view because it really is. It's Paul, but like, I always had the idea of like, he has this conflict with his family in the beginning, but then later they're going to ask him to help. Mm. And that was it.
Yeah.
And that was what it was going to be. And I had, you know, I think I had a lot of, doubt whether I should write it. Mm. So I don't know. There was that one, like, I've been writing a story for probably 3 years.
Oh wow.
But I've written other books since then. So I think, I don't know, it depends. Like, I just get weird ideas, and a lot of, I get them while I'm writing the book. In the middle. I should make these people like they were born at the same hospital, born on the same day, like, and you know,
right.
I don't know. Roll with that.
Or, right.
So I do. I usually get an idea. I write like a really loose, like one page, like maybe what the book's about, who the people are.
Yeah.
What, like maybe what jobs they have, or you know, the one night that I steal from myself the characters from other books.
Right.
Paul is, he's probably in most of my, like, probably all six of my books.
Ah, really?
That are set there. Yeah. I mean, even just mentioned, like, you know, by a friend or something. So, you know, yeah, I mean, some are like ideas. But like, I'm writing, right now I'm writing a story about like Howard's adventure.
Yeah.
With the line, Tigers, right?
Right, so right.
I was so inspired by that story.
Nice.
Like, I'm like, this is such a cool thing. Like, you know, I made him younger. Sorry. Howard said he's like, as long as him young, blonde, and muscle, I was done. But like that was, so that, I mean, Maggie and I were riveted to that story. Like that, you know, I find inspiration in strange places, or it's a great, like, a general outline, like a one page, just like a treatment even, and then I'll do like a longer, I'll do my chapter outline, like a timeline. You know, sometimes I don't do anything and I just start writing it.
Wow. Yeah, really.
I think in the beginning, like, for the first two books, I wrote them by hand first.
Crazy.
Because that was just.
Right.
Used to. And so now, but then it was such a slog to then.
Right.
So now I can just.
Yeah. But
a more detailed outline.
Right.
And then, but I deviate from the outline all the time.
Yeah.
So I know. Like, people ask, are you a plotter or a pantser? So, like, obviously, I'm like a combination.
Yeah.
Like, I like to have structure. Like, I want to know when, you know, like, the problem's going to happen, or the, you know, any sort of conflict, and then the solution. And but sometimes it just happens.
Right.
I don't know, a few, like, a state of trance, or I'm, like, in a trance.
Right.
Because you said, oh, don't know your book by heart. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'll read it and be like, who wrote this? I don't know. Like, where did it come from?
She's brilliant. She's brilliant. All right. Well, let's. Why don't you read a bit from The International Language for us?
Okay.
And then we'll chat more about that specific book when you're finished.
Okay. All right. Oh, my goodness. All right. It's not like this is the first time I've done this either. Anyway, okay. So it's a prologue, and the title's I'm Coming Out, and it's, this is Paul, 10 years ago. Dust mote looked and slick, heavy with the news of me coming out to my family. My mother's kids supply the oxygen seems to have been sucked from the room. An ice cube clinks in a discarded lemonade glass, sweating like the son of a Mormon telling his very devout parents he's gay. I'm gay, I say again, having the full attention of parents, Dee Dee and Oliver, and the older 4-7 siblings. And the oldest already knows, and she is here for moral support. I think they hurt, he whispers, clutching my arm. Out of the 5 adults, only 2 are still involved in the church, and my younger brother JJ and I left in our teens as we became aware of our own ideals and values and believe there's a power bigger than us. JJ believes in God, but not in church, and I'm agnostic. Charlie and Patty, my other 2 adult siblings, are very much involved in the church and have strong feelings about us leaving, but haven't resolved communication just yet. Things are already tense, is what I'm trying to tell you. My 3 younger siblings, Kate, Peter, and Alice, are not here for this conversation because my mother would say young. My goal was not to get her off too much, but she looks pretty livid. You are not, my brother Charlie says, jabbing his finger in the air towards me. You've had 3 girlfriends just in college. Charlie's 2 years younger than me and attending college at Brigham Young, where many good Mormons attend. I myself went there for undergrad and then to UCLA for grad school. I love him, is all in on the church, and I knew he would be the hardest sell. Charlie, it took me a while to come out to you guys, and I'm sorry for lying to you, but I've never been with a woman. I respond, cringing, because I really did hate lying to them. What about Kelly, Chris, and Joelle? Also, you had that girlfriend in high school, Frida. I'm not sure what proved me wrong, but maybe I do. He's in denial. Frida and I were really friends, but she knew I was gay before I even told her. It's really neither here nor there, though. I'm still attracted to and date only men. I'll let you figure out Kelly, Chris, and Joel for yourself. They had never brief college boyfriends, but I did talk about them. I just never corrected their impression that they were women. My mother springs from her chair, walks out of the room, and slams the door. My dad rests slowly, gives me a sympathetic look, and follows her out. At least he softly latches the door instead of slamming it. I'm not sure why I was expecting a different outcome, but I guess I'm an optimist like that. I love my family, but hoping their love for me was deeper than their love for religious dogma, in this case, homophobia. AJ picks up a spray bottle, spritzes one of the orchids, and gives me a big hug. I love you, Pop, and I don't care who you choose to love, you'll always be my brother. Thanks, JJ, I love you too. I give him a sincere smile, raise me with the bottle. Hey, get out of here. He laughs, gently placing the bottle not where it's supposed to be, and stands by my side. Charlie has his head in his hands, and I'm really hoping for the best, but he is very conservative, has often talked disparagingly about gays and their agenda. My bed sides with Mom on this one. My sister Patty is silent beside him, and she's the wild card. Her faith is strong. She and I have a close relationship, not as close as Anne and I, but we talk at least 2 times a week on the phone. She just finished at BYU. Charlie, Patty, I love you both. I hope you can accept my news. I'm not any different from who I was an hour ago, your goofball brother. Charlie's here with the look. Brother, what kind of brother lies to his family and goes against everything we've thought? You're not my brother. Spittle flies in his mouth, his rage evident. He wipes it away and storms out. Patty's silent through the drama, never once looks at me as she follows Charlie out. The minute the door closes again, I turn to Anne and dissolve into tears. JJ rubs my back. When we planned this meeting, we had higher hopes. Aside from her and JJ, my has shunned me. I knew they'd be upset, maybe feel some betrayal, but the complete freeze that Charlie and Patty is devastating. My dad walked the knife to my heart. Aunt Ruffle, they'll come around me, maybe not for a while, but you're their son and brother. They can't change that no matter how much they pray. I hope she's right, but I know how devout my mother is and how strictly she follows the tenets of her faith. I also know my Charlie and know he believes people like me can be cured. He's talked about at length at various family dinners how gay people are just misguided and led by the Hollywood libs. His first communication with me would probably be a link to one of those camps that can pray the gay away. When I was a kid and I knew that I was different, believe me, I tried to pray it away. As I grew older, I was lucky and had supportive friends and a sister who was willing to talk about everything with me. So I became more comfortable with who I was. Turns out I'm super awesome, and yes, I love men, if you were wondering. It's not even the interesting thing about me. So you think the whole fam will join me at Pride this year? I smile through my tears. Maybe Dee Dee wave a rainbow flag on the RuPaul float. Stop it. Perception of what a gay man is doesn't define you. Your life is interesting, rich, meaningful. Quit marginalizing yourself. Anne is right. I tear myself down when I'm feeling vulnerable. My family does a great job of making me feel like today they've done a really good. Can I stay with you for a bit? I ask, knowing she'll say yes, since she offered already. We really did. But Anne is a realist. My room ready. Let's go get your things, she says, and we head to my room to gather my meager belongings. I feel hollow as I climb the stairs to the room I've had on my own since JJ has been at UC Santa Barbara for his freshman. His duffel sits on his bed as he only arrived about an hour ago for Thanksgiving break. I grab the boxes under my bed and my suitcase from the closet and start the tedious job of packing. Anne helps for a while until I beg her to stop rolling my clothes into small tubes. I love her, but I spend a lot on clothes and they are not to be rolled. He loves clothes. When I packed everything into Anne's car, I hesitate but head back to the house I grew up in. In the kitchen, I find Dad. He's sitting at the table with a cup of hot cider, staring out the window. I'll be at Anne's today as I place the house key on the table in front of him. I love you, Dad. For about a minute, I stand next to him in the quiet, waiting. Another few minutes go by, and he says nothing, occasionally drinking his cider. No coffee for this good Mormon. My dad and mom are the only ones in the family who don't drink coffee and tea. Everyone else, except for the little ones, of course, drink them by the gallon. I tear up again, finding it hard to leave him. My dad and I have always been close, and I'm sure this is really hard on him, too. Hesitating, I put my hand on his shoulder, give it a light squeeze, and walk out. When we pull out of the driveway, my tears start again. I may never go home. It's real. Anne holds my hand and cries quietly with me. Ugh. Oh, you were promised a comedy. We just needed to get the serious stuff out of the way so you'd know where I'm coming from and how much of a hero I am for overcoming adversity.
That's great. That's great. Now everyone's intrigued, so they're going to have to get the book.
That's one thing Andrew said. He's like, I love it when Paul talks to us. He like breaks the fourth wall.
Right.
Yeah. I can't help myself. And Paul, you know, he thinks he's his own, you know, his life is his own like movie, television show or whatever.
Right, right. I mean, it seemed that of all your novels, this one required the most research. Talk about how much work went into getting so much right, including, of course, the foreign languages spoken throughout the book.
Yeah, I kind of shot myself in the foot
with that, with that theme.
So Paul he's an interpreter for a company that does interprets for large corporations and. I don't know. It's a made-up company. I don't even know if it's a real thing. But so he's always just had an affinity for language, and it's like a natural talent for him. And he loves travel, loves other cultures. He just loves people. Like he loves talking to people. And you know, in my mind, it was like the more people he could communicate with, the better. Like why just. To people who speak English when he could speak, you know, in Spanish and Portuguese and Korean and Gaelic. And yeah, so there was I did a lot of research on, the one thing that I wanted him to be good at was like dialect and slang, right? So like being able to talk with people using, you know, a more, a less formal, and so I asked if I knew somebody, I would ask them if they had like a saying for something. And, so I did get a lot of my chapter type are all foreign. I did get a lot of that. And then some of the things he says, but the thing all is he combines everything. Like he makes up his own language too. So that was, I knew I was going to. It'd be hard to like combine French and Spanish sometimes, or like Portuguese, you know, so he kind of, you know, just talks the way he talks. And yeah, so I, you know, it was definitely a thing that like, I had to do a lot of work on, but it was fun.
Right. Right.
Well, especially I did a lot of like research on how people talk about dating and like hitting on and a lot of like, you know, the way, you know, like in Brazil, like the way a gay guy would hit on another guy, right? So like, they're not going to say the same things that maybe like Americans would say, excuse me. I did some research, just in order to be sensitive, because I'm writing about something that I'm not
right, a gay. Right.
So, and I did have, I had a lot of reservations about that as well. Mm. But I will tell you a very interesting part of the romance community. There are a large amount of women who love reading male-male romance, like love it. And they are like adoring.
Yes. So, right, right.
And they are, so it's, yeah, it's interesting, but I also really, you know, was hoping that some gay men would read it as well and enjoy it. I had a friend who he read it, like I would send him chapters.
Yeah.
And, and he, what he liked, the biggest compliment was he said it was, it just felt like reading a normal romance. And that there wasn't, you know, there was drama, but it wasn't like traumatic, you know. Like,
right, right.
There wasn't any violence there, you know, and sort of, it was mostly a comedy.
Yeah.
You know, there was some, you know, some conflict, but he said that because he said he reads a lot of romance, male, female, and just romance. And
yeah.
Read romance books, and so yeah, he just said it was just so nice to read a book that sounded like the other books, but it was two men instead of a man and a woman.
Right. Yeah. So what is some of the feedback been from your audience, which is probably mostly women? This being your first gay themed book.
I mean, I've mostly gotten positive feedback. I, you know, usually don't get a lot of negative reviews right away.
Yeah.
Later. And then, you know, but the reviews I've gotten have been pretty good. They're just the feedback. My one friend who doesn't read, she doesn't read MMM, like not
because, yeah.
Like it's just not her thing.
Yeah.
But she read it and she actually really liked it. So.
Nice. She's gonna read more. Right. That's great. You write some incredible lovemaking scenes, girl. I mean, in all of your books, that's why I say to me, it's erotica in a way, you know, do you read erotica? Have you read erotica?
I do. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because most contemporary romance has explicit sex in it.
Right.
And I think erotica is more, to me, erotica is like mostly sex with a little bit of story.
Right.
Like I'm, you know, I've got some sex and a lot more story.
But, yeah. You have a lot of sex and a lot of story. a good amount of sex, we'll say.
Well, and what's funny too is Andrew said that he's like, I don't believe that they would stop. He's like, guys, don't stop. They sort of like, they wait a little bit. They don't have a way.
Right.
Like, that's a bunch of crap. And I'm like, well, you're not reading the book I am. But, I definitely read a ton of sexy book. And I, you know, I do watch some porn, you know, for McCann.
Purely for research.
No, but you do sometimes just to like, would that work?
Right. Is that even possible? And so for
fake Andrew, like, yeah, I'm like, can you just get this real quick? I just want to make sure that my hand could reach.
Right. Poor Andrew, tortured in such horrible ways through your creative process.
But that, like, that I was super nervous about.
Yeah.
I was.
Right.
But I've read a ton of MM books too, like, and I've tried to read some by male authors, which are harder to find, but they're there.
Yeah.
I think they're just fine because of where the community I'm in, but
right.
They're easy to find but I did, you know, with my, I guess he was my alpha reader because beta is when you finished writing like a full.
Right.
But yeah, so he gave me a couple of ideas, but he definitely was like, he's like, I really like those scenes. So I feel like just as long as they're, you know, like they're loving and, you know, and like having fun, like.
Right.
I mean, so I guess sometimes they can be cringy and you try to like. You're trying not to use the same words over and over.
Right.
And then when there's, you know, there's two, you know, appendages.
Right.
One.
Different equipment, right? That's great. So just a few more questions because we've been chatting for a long time and it's been wonderful.
I do like to talk about books.
I know. Excellent. Excellent. So what are you reading now? What's on your nightstand now?
Well, like I said, I finished this, like it was an 8-book series and it was really dark. Like,
oh, yeah.
Mexican cartels and thing and like sexual slavery and
And
so I finished that and now I'm reading like a college like a rom-com kind of I'm also reading like Obama's book still. I picked that up on it's on my so I read a lot of books at once.
Yeah. Oh, you do, huh?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
And so and then I've been reading some mysteries too, so
nice.
I like to mix it up. But yeah. The dark that was for me, like I have if it's a series, I have to read the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like I probably could have taken some breaks. Because it was a lot.
Right.
Like, oof.
Yeah. You're a binge
get a little desensitized to it.
Right.
You're kidnapped again. Oh, well.
Sure they'll be. Right. Nice. So talk briefly about a little more about what you're writing right now.
Right. So I'm writing a book about Sheldon, who is also has been a character very like tertiary, like in my books. And he's like, I've always story. He's sort of this like big, nerdy, but like hot guy who like, he has one night stands like all the time and he falls in love with everybody. Right. But they want nothing to do with him when it's done. So he's on the quest to find somebody to love and, he's, but he doesn't do it right way.
Right.
And he's a veterinarian. initially he was kind of based on Howard's like funny stories that he would always tell us about. He's had a bunch. So I always had in mind to write about him. And then when Howard went on his adventure last year to help, you know, move all of those lions and tigers from all of South Africa, I thought, like, oh, that's a perfect thing, like a perfect setting to write, you know, sort of like a they don't want each other in the beginning.
Right.
and forced together and, you know, and cleaning out tiger cages and, you know, dealing with sort of stuff. So I've been watching a lot of the like videos about the rescue, like the organization that he worked with, I'm just starting to write that, and I'm like, God, again, like I like have to do all this research,
right?
You know, I can't make it easy on myself. You know, a teacher and a
right. Well, you bring all that into your writing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun though. I feel like for me, I learned so much about something new, like, you know, and I think it's such a cool story and just such a cool thing that they did. And I love, you know, like who doesn't love like lions that have been in love and are like, you know, forever.
Right.
Like that is the backdrop of a romance is kind of fun.
Well, good luck with that. Tell our listeners how they can get your eyes on The International Language, as well as your other books.
Well, you can look me up on Amazon. All my books are on Amazon. They're in Kindle Unlimited, which is, if you have a monthly subscription, they're free. Or you could get two, so you can get a physical book if that's your thing. And you just look me up, Jensen. On Amazon.
Spell your last name for everyone.
I will. I know. Andrew's like, why didn't you use a pen name? I'm like, I don't know. No one has my name. No one's going to get mixed
right,
up with
exactly.
me. He's like, but nobody's going to be. But anyway, Lurssen. Lurssen.
Very good. Very good. And if you miss that, you can get the information on gaysonoma.com or outbeatradio.com once the interview is posted. Jen, thanks so much for joining me tonight.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Gary.
Great to see you. Love to everyone.
Yeah. Don't overdo on the Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, too late. Oh, it's certainly too late for that, my dear.
Thank you for listening tonight. Please listen to Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB. Greg Moralia will be here next week with another episode of Outbeat News in Depth. We thank you for supporting KRCB and supporting the LGBT community here in the North Bay. Please have a great week.